Good evening, I'm Christian Esquera, and welcome to this episode of After the Fact, where we get to see things more clearly, where we get a better sense of the truth. Let's begin by dissecting the news. Earlier today, the son of the former Philippine dictator Ferdinand Marcos announced that he's running for president in 2022. The recorded video announcement was short, Marcos Jr. promising to bring back a unifying leadership to this country, which his father ruled with an iron fist for most of his 20-year regime. And based on official records and court decisions, a nation plundered by the family and its cronies worth billions of dollars. So why would Filipinos today vote for Ferdinand Bongbong Marcos Jr.? And what would explain his strong showing in surveys, which, if true, would raise the prospect of another Marcos in Malacañang 36 years after Filipinos booted him out? Now, be part of our discussion. Send us your questions and comments on our YouTube live chat or tweet us using the hashtag ANCAfterTheFact. Joining us tonight is former Social Welfare and Development Secretary Professor Judy Tagabulo. She's a convener of the group Campaign Against the Return of the Marcoses to Malacañang or CARMA. Good evening, Professor Secretary Judy, and thank you for joining us on the program tonight.
Good evening, Christian.
Not exactly a good evening for your group, including yourself, of course. But first, I'd like to ask the obvious question. Why does your group find this candidacy for president by Ferdinand Bongbong Marcos Jr. so objectionable, so repulsive at this stage?
Next year, which is election year, is the 50th anniversary of martial law, Christian. So the other night, actually for the past several nights, we have been holding masses and prayers and memorial for national artist Bien Lombera, who was a political prisoner during martial law. And the stories of torture, the stories of arrest, the stories of what the youth did then, and even the generation of Dr. Lombera went through during the martial law years were brought forth again. So that memories are still fresh of the violation of human rights, the plunder, the governance. It was essentially a one family rule. So the return of the Marcos Jr. to Malacañang is but a continuation. It's an attempt to continue to restore such regime, such a rule without atonement for what has happened, without returning the plundered wealth.
Okay, personally, as a Marcos martial law victim yourself, how did you receive this announcement of his son that is running for president in 2022?
As I said in my statement, parang a spit on the graves of those who were killed during the martial law and on those of us who have survived martial law. Meaning the sins and crimes that have happened have been again brought to the fore. It is as if it has not happened. And we need to ensure that the Marcoses should not return to Malacañang again. It is a brazen attempt of the restoration. November 8 is the anniversary of the conviction of Imelda Marcos of the Sandigang Bayan. Mm. She was convicted of transferring $200 million from the Metro Manila funds to Switzerland. Mm. But she has not been in prison, although the conviction said she should spend 6 to 7 years for every count of the graft. Okay. And now the son, no, a convicted mother, and now the son is running for president.
But how would you respond to supporters of Bongbong Marcos who say that the sins of the father should not visit upon the son? For the children, in this case, Bongbong Marcos.
There are so many historical documents, Christian, that Bongbong was not the little kid during the martial law. He was governor and vice governor of Ilocos. He was appointed chair of PhilComSat and received a very high salary. So it is not a question of the sin of the father, being us from the sun. It is the sun who was part of that kind of rule and regime and plunder, the part of the family who has not atoned, who has not apologized, who has not returned, no, the plundered money, except those that were forcibly taken from them because of the efforts of the Philippine government, as well as other lawyers.
But can you honestly expect this family to actually admit to those quote-unquote sins committed under the regime of Ferdinand Marcos, given the ramifications, diba? Hindi naman nila gagawin yun, eh.
Obviously not, sir. Obviously not. And they're so proud of it. You've seen the video of Imelda showing a foreign correspondent all the paintings that they had, Gauguin, Picasso, you know? So obviously they're proud of that kind of history. Either they're proud of it, they're saying it never happened, they're saying it was all a creation of, you know, of the people against the Marcoses. So our role as the Karma, the campaign against the return of the Marcoses to Malacañang, is really to fight that kind of restoration, to fight that kind of attempts to go back to Malacañang. It is also important for us Christian, because of the memory of so many thousands who died, who were tortured during martial law, including national artist Bien Lumbera, Senator Ninoy Aquino, and the thousands of students and workers. And these are not anonymous names. They can go to the Bantayog ng mga Bayani, see for themselves the names, read for themselves the stories of torture and suffering during the martial law.
Okay. Now, given those historical records, given those court decisions pertaining to stolen money by the Marcoses and their cronies, how do you explain this enduring support by a good segment of Filipinos, of Filipino voters, behind this family, despite evidence proving or showing that there was indeed plunder, there were human rights violations, instances of torture, detention, and disappearances, forced disappearances.
Plunder. Important point. Now, the Mindanao bombings. Well, one, we've had historical revisionism, the conscious effort, you know, to paint a false picture of what had happened by using social media, by using YouTube, by using an army of trolls. So that's one, historical revisionism, consciously planned and circulated. Two would be the failure of post-Marcos government to ensure that education and the youth would be aware of what has happened during martial law. Especially the new curriculum has really reduced Philippine history into one of the minor subjects in the elementary. And third would be, at present, the role of the present dispensation, this regime, to contribute to this historical revisionism by allowing the burial of the Marcos in the Libingan ng mga Bayani, in spite of the fact that the corpse was allowed to be brought back during Fidel Ramos' time with the condition that it remained in Ilocos. And then, you know, the support given to Aimee Marcos, the continuing friendship between Aimee Marcos, Bongbong Marcos, and Sara Duterte. So that would be the third reason.
Yeah, and basically they did not leave power. Or perhaps even if they were out of power, it was just very, very short, because they continued to rule Ilocos Norte. Eventually, two of the siblings became senators, and now one is running for president again. There was this interesting point that he mentioned in his brief speech announcing that he was running for president earlier today. He said that I will bring that form of unifying leadership back to our country. How did you receive this? Because listening to you now, and of course the accounts of many others who were still alive, who were alive during martial law, this might be a contradiction in terms, so to speak, or an irony, if you will, unifying president, when in fact, the mere fact that he announced his presidential bid today, there are a lot of angry comments, especially on social media.
Before I answer that, I would like to, yeah, you're correct, you know. They have come back to power at the provincial and regional level. So that would be part of the reason. It was not only the educational system that was not corrected, but giving them the chance to come back without pursuing the crimes against them, you know. So that one. So actually, what I heard was sama-sama tayong babangon, Christian. Yeah. That was what I heard at the end. I said, wow, who is he talking to? All the cronies, the plunderers, that they're going to come back with a vengeance as what they did during the Marcos year. Remember, I still remember ABS-CBN. So there are so many things going on now under the present dispensation that reminds us of the martial law years, the closure of ABS-CBN, the going after media which are critical, the red tagging. These are the same features prior to martial law. So okay. Sama-sama tayong babangon, kayo lang, at hindi namin papayagan yan, no? Yun yung sisikapin ng karma. Ang lahat ng mga naging biktima ng batas militar, ang mga kabataan na malinaw sa kanilang kasaysayan at nagmarcha sila sa libingan ng mga bayani noong inilibing si Marcos, kaya patago siyang inilibing, dito yung pag-asa natin. Na we won't allow them, no, to come back to power, to go back to Malacañang, because they haven't paid their dues to the Filipino people. Their victims have not been given justice. So, no. No Marcos Duterte 2022. That is our goal.
Okay, and finally, Secretary Judy, what would a Marcos victory in the presidential election mean to the Philippines? Basically, how would it reflect on us as a country and as a people, given the fact that 35 years ago, Filipinos ousted his father, who was a dictator?
It's like, for me, the Palisem would be, it's like Hitler returning to rule Germany. And actually what I was thinking, one of my worst nightmares would be when they return to Malacañang, one of the first things they would do, aside from making sure that ABS-CBN will never be given a franchise, would be removing the bantayog ng mga bayani. Because that right now, that is the memorial where the victims and martyrs of the Marcoses are present, no? Whether in names or in stories, but those are definitely witnesses to the terror horror of the martial law period. So no to Marcos Jr., no to Bongbong Marcos for president in 2022, the 50th anniversary of martial law, Christian. Okay. Can you imagine that?
Okay. Before I end this interview with you, Secretary Judy, I'd just like to read some of the comments on social media in reaction to this presidential candidacy of Ferdinand Bongbong Marcos Jr. One of the Twitter users said, imagining every single person who stood and fought for democracy in 1986 at the People Power Revolution, reading this and my heart hurts. Gets ko na yung gravity ng pagsabi ng over my dead body. Tapos, sabi naman ng isa, BBM, Bongbong Marcos Jr., spent years claiming dishonest elections against Vice President Leni Robredo. He spent years lying, revising, and distorting his dictator father's inhumane history. Helping Filipinos will never be his priority. Remember that. No to Marcos comeback. And another comment. Actually, this was from one cartoonist, a political cartoonist. He drew a cartoon in reference to this presidential run by Bongbong Marcos. He said, the full circle comeback we should never allow to happen. And lastly, another comment, let them be held accountable and never put our country's democracy to a son of a dictator. With that, I'd like to end this discussion, this portion of our episode. Thank you very much, Secretary Judy Taguiwalo, for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Christian.
We're now joined by Professor Ronald Holmes. He's the president of Pulse Asia Incorporated. Good evening, Professor Ronnie, and thank you for joining us on the program. Please unmute your mic.
Magandang gabi, Christian.
Okay. Before we talk about the results of your latest survey, many of which are quite telling, I'd just like to ask you as a political scientist, this presidential candidacy by Ferdinand Bongbong Marcos, from a tactical point of view, if you are a supporter of Ferdinand Marcos Jr., isn't this basically a good timing for you? Because if you run in this election, people would be focused on the pandemic, and perhaps there would be better reason not to talk so much about the past.
Yeah, it's not exactly just the good timing. It's also, I mean, I reviewed all of the election results before, Christian, and you would note that Bongbong Marcos, of course, lost in the vice presidential race, but he had about 1/3 of the votes. So I think in terms of timing, this would be perhaps the final chance for Bongbong to run for the presidency. Since he's what, 64 years old. Is it
64? Right?
So it might be possible for him to sit it out, but it might be the best condition. And as you said, the pandemic may actually lead the voters to be more receptive about solutions to the problems that we're confronting right now, rather than really things that have happened in the past. That's lamentable, but that's the reality of electoral politics.
Mm-hmm. And basically, in your previous surveys, in your most recent surveys, there was a strong showing by Bongbong Marcos in your results. How do you explain that? Of course, this is a pre-election survey. The campaign period hasn't started yet.
It's a pre-election survey. His voting support has not changed. It's still at about 14%. Compared to the June survey, there were, 12 names in the presidential list. So it's if you apply the margin of error, he's just about a percentage point behind the leading contender if the elections were held in September, that's Sara Duterte. So I think it's also the political brand. That's something that we cannot deny. The Marcoses have been around for a long, long time. I would believe that the support for the Marcoses would cut across age groups. It's not a question of just the youth not voting for Marcos. Actually, it's the opposite. What we've seen in the 2016 election, for example, was that the youth vote for Marcos was less than the votes of people who belong to age groups that experience the dictatorship.
So malakas siya sa youth?
Hindi siya malakas sa youth.
Mahina
siya sa youth relative to all other candidates.
Okay.
If I remember the pre-election survey, the one that was generating more support among the 18 to 24 was then candidate Chisa Escudero, and then Lenny Robredo caught up. But the voting support for Bongbong Marcos among the 18-24 was less than the voting support that he was getting from people who were 45 years and above. I mean, to say those who had been... who had experience and were conscious enough during the regime of the father Bongbong.
Okay, and based on these latest numbers in your latest surveys, does this actually make him unbeatable? Or of course not necessarily, but perhaps he can be considered as a strong contender before the actual campaign starts?
You can consider him a strong contender. I would not say that he's unbeatable because the campaign has not started. He has come out with a statement about a unifying leadership. Let's see whether people would buy that particular message. It's the same message, actually, that he communicated in 2016. I remember the message in simple terms in 2016 was to move on. So he's basically carrying the same message and trying to distance himself from the past. I know that there are groups who would try to bring back the past. But, you know, if you're talking about 70 or 60 million voters, how many of these voters did really experience the atrocities under Marcos? And it would be a challenge, really, for these groups to really campaign against against Bongbong Marcos.
In previous surveys and previous election cycles by Pulse Asia, was the Marcos Marcelo issue actually figure as a major campaign issue?
I don't think that we have really focused on the legacy or the record of martial law in the past. What we know is that there are some areas which definitely do not necessarily provide support for the Marcoses. In the single winner contest that Bongbong Marcos participated in, there were areas that he drew so much support, but there were areas that were resisting and going for other candidates. Maybe that's an indication that the voting support for Marcos would really be more geographical, spatial rather than, and he has that advantage. He has at least two regions to bank on. And then remarkably, he's also strong in the National Capital Region, which during the Marcos time was essentially an opposition country.
Okay. Now let's go to your latest survey results regarding national issues and the performance of the national government agencies toward these issues. Are we seeing a preview of the election issues that will have to be addressed by the candidates in 2022?
We're seeing basically a preview of what would be the main concern, and it's really just a fundamental issue. It's the economy. And anything that has to do with the economy, from high prices of commodities to jobs to income, trying to bring about economic recovery despite the threat of the pandemic. Essentially, solutions to these problems with regard to pay and jobs and the reduction of poverty and high prices are the things that people would basically are what that's what people are seeing right now. And these are the issues that will probably dominate the election campaign.
And how did Pulse Asia pick those issues on which the national government's performance would be gauged?
We've been running basically a list of about 12 issues all throughout the surveys that we've done through the years. The only difference now is that we added two issues that are related to COVID. These are the issue of preventing the spread of COVID and providing assistance to those who are affected by COVID-19. Okay. So the 12 other issues are longitudinal issues that we've had in our surveys in the past, Christian.
Okay, and how do you explain the fewer number of Filipinos, at least as reflected by the answers of the respondents, toward their lower approval of the national government's performance in terms of controlling the spread of COVID-19? It's minus 25.
That's year on year, basically.
Yeah, year on year. Tapos yung June versus September this year, that's minus 6.
Yeah,
and at lahat pabagsak, no? Para can you explain this to our viewers? Lahat bumaba eh.
Any change that is more than 4 percentage points from our last survey in June is significant. So lahat halos bumaba. At ang what has happened here is that the more important issues, the most urgent issues that people basically identified, which are inflation, pay, jobs, poverty, and even the fight against government corruption, those are where you have a significant decline. And aside from the significant decline with regard to the four economic issues, the approval is less than majority, Christian.
Okay. And how do you explain that? Or this is something expected? Because it's a damn if you do, damn if you don't situation if you are the national government. You cannot really make everyone happy in terms of how you're dealing with this pandemic. Is that it?
It's not that you cannot make everyone happy. It's just that the state of the economy is really the main bad. If you look at the number of jobs that are being created, if you look at the stability of those jobs, if you look at even the prices of commodities, you've had a series of oil price increases over the past 6 weeks. So I think, it's not the damn if you do, damn if you don't situation. It's a question really of whether government could attend to these basic economic issues. Government's hands, we know, would be tied with respect to some of these economic issues. It will really require a massive stimulus to be introduced by government, but we know that the economic stimulus is quite limited also.
Okay, I remember in a previous conversation I think we had last year, we were talking about the president being a Teflon president. At that time, if I remember it correctly, there was also a survey by Pulse Asia. And one analysis was that these issues, even if they are negative, do not necessarily stick to President Duterte himself. My question is, given that approval of the government's pandemic response as well as the provision of assistance for those victimized by COVID-19, both of them are down 25 points and the other 20 respectively. Does this mean that this time it could stick to President Duterte himself, being the head of the bureaucracy?
Yeah, in this regard, when you see significant shifts in terms of the national administration's approval, then you can also surmise that the president's own approval rating would also be significantly affected. And to that extent, there would be a significant or substantive reduction in terms of that approval.
But that would have to be seen in a subsequent survey, right? Whether that would actually happen.
Well, whether this will slide, whether the president will be held accountable with respect to the failure of the administration that he's leading in addressing these issues, would be known in all subsequent surveys. Yes.
Okay. But in the past, for example, last year, I remember you told me this, when it came to the public's criticism of the way the government has been dealing with the pandemic on the ground, mostly the criticisms were directed toward the local officials, at most the department heads, but never to the level of President Duterte, even if he was actually very much in charge in terms of messaging.
Yeah, and the other thing that we found out, Christian, in our previous survey, that was September last year, and after the June survey, where we asked what was the major deficiency of the government in addressing the pandemic, it came out that it was in terms of the limitation in providing social amelioration assistance, yung ayuda. So last year, the president's ratings were high and the national administration's rating was high, primarily because I think there were two social amelioration tranches that were released last year at the beginning of the ECQ and towards before the lifting of the ECQ. But now in the past year, I mean, in this year, I think there was only one. So when people do not get that form of assistance, I think that's one reason why they're less approving. More specifically, if you look at the number in terms of the approval rate for providing assistance or subsidies for those who have lost their jobs due to COVID. So yung ayuda is key. That ayuda allows people to be still approving of the president because they see that the national government is providing such assistance.
Madali maalala.
Pero in the past few months, we have not seen, and that's the reason why NCR and the rest of the country are not in ECQ. Because if you're not under ECQ, the government is not required to provide such social amelioration assistance.
Okay. Let's also talk about the decline in public approval of two centerpiece programs by President Duterte, by this administration. Number one, fighting criminality, approval is down by 14 points. That's, of course, significant, no? Year on year. And the other is fighting graft and corruption in government, down by 25 points. How do you explain that?
The fighting criminality, I think maybe there are experiences on the part of the public that in their areas, the crime incidences might be high. Basically, Christian, with regard to disapproval ratings of the national administration, I think the basis of people in terms of approving of the administration's performance would be their local experiences. So I don't know whether those incidences of crime would be higher. And it would not be surprising if they're higher, specifically given the difficulties that people are confronted right now. Well, that's just one factor. In terms of the graft and corruption, I would say that a number of events in the recent past, may contribute to that. We noted in our media release that prior to the survey, as early as late August, there were investigations in terms of fund misuse in the Department of Health that eventually continued into the investigations into that Pharmaly deal. So that may have had an impact in terms of people's impression about the administration's performance in fighting graft and corruption.
Do the pronouncements by the president every night perceived to be in defense of Pharmaly, and of course directed against the senators, have those statements been factored in the survey already?
I think those statements came at the middle of the survey, Christian, when there was an exchange between the president and members of the Senate as an institution, and more specifically with the chair of the Blue Ribbon Committee. So they may not have resonated yet at the time that we conducted the fieldwork.
Okay. Now, speaking of the decline in public approval when it comes to fighting criminality, this is basically a reflection of the public sentiment, which of course the administration has also been pointing out before. Now, if you think this is not working, just ask the common people, do you feel safer now over the past 5 years? Ito ba yung reflection ng sagot dun sa tanong na yan?
Yeah, it would be, at least for the purpose of capturing the public sentiment at the time that we conducted the survey, in response to that question.
Okay. Professor Ronald Holmes, thank you very much for joining us tonight, sir.
Thank you very much, Christian.
And we're going to take a quick break after the fact. We'll be right back.